Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 271. I'm Kevin.
I'm Lena Condor.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug.
Intern.
So, guys, I brought you here together this week to discuss something very important to me. The placement of Doug's barbecue in the backyard.
Well, it's just along the side fence.
No, that's all. I'm not done. You look at Doug's backyard. It's massive. You could put like four swimming pools in it.
Not near the house.
The barbecue is like halfway down the backyard. Now, I want to know what's between the house and the barbecue that you couldn't put it closer to the house.
There's a deck, and there's also, you know, the air conditioning unit. So we just moved it down a little. That's all. There was already
almost in your neighbor's backyard is how far you have it down.
There's a concrete slab that the people who owned the house before us already had there. So we figured, why not put the grill on the concrete slab?
Now, the other thing, first of all, if you don't invite us to the movies when you go, not even invite for anybody. Now you have steak and send me photos of it and no invite.
Well, you're all the way in Canada. Those steaks aren't going to last until you get down here.
That's true, but I am coming.
Soon. I have teenage kids. Those steaks will be gone in 10 minutes.
Now, the big question is, did you make cookies to go with the steaks?
No cookies.
Okay. So how's everybody else been doing?
Not even the cookies with carrots?
No.
Where do you get your steaks?
Butcher's shop, from the town I grew up in, which is about 45 minutes from my house, but
we're in the drive.
But it's nice.
That's like the you same drive amount 45 of here barbecue
minutes to get steaks.
Oh, they're probably about 50 times better than what you get at the grocery store, so it's worth it.
Okay, that's fair. I accept that. I'll give you that. So, intern, what have you been up to?
Just working.
You haven't been out for a little walk in this nice chilly air we're having?
Well, I've been weeding the front lawn and then mowing the back lawn. That's about it.
Well, that's important stuff this time of year in Canada.
Yes.
Okay. Since nobody has anything as usual, let's start.
Are we going to finish him?
We're going to start the Mortal Kombat right now.
Yes. Mortal Kombat, directed by Simon McCoy, screenplay by Greg Russo and Dave Callahan, starring Louis Tan, Jessica McNamee, Josh Lawson, Joe Taslim, Mikad Brooks, Tadanobu Asano, and Hiroyuki Sanada.
Wow. Yes. I'm going to start off that I apologize for anybody that had to watch this movie. I understand this is my favorite video game of all times, but I don't know what you guys watched because it was not Mortal Kombat.
I was wondering.
The first 10 minutes were pretty solid. I can't explain any other part of this movie to anybody. None of the characters seem right. They all seem weird. I don't know what their motivations are other than to confuse me. I don't know who edited this film other than a five-year-old child and his classmates on a recess break from public school because they were at home too long. And I'll discuss the end when you guys have had your turn. So tell me what you guys thought of Mortal Kombat.
It was awful. It was just bad. I don't understand why the guy we're supposed to root for doesn't win any fights that he's in until the very end. I thought it would be better maybe if he actually won the first fight he had. Maybe he didn't have the mark of the Mortal Kombat on him and he gets the mark when he defeats the first person in that tournament, which, by the way, was the only tournament in the movie. There was no Mortal Kombat tournament. And maybe it would have been better if it was just a Sub-Zero Scorpion prequel film. That seemed to be the story they wanted to tell, but I guess they felt they had to flesh it out by adding all these non really essential characters.
Come on. They make Sonya Blade for the video game, who's very prevalent in the first film and in the video game, and they make her a chump.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, cause that's what I want to see. If Sonya Blade's my favorite character, I want to see Sonya Blade being a chump.
Which one is that one?
Sonya Blade's the woman that hangs out with Jax and basically carries his bags like a chauffeur.
Oh, McNammy? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I don't have any attachment to Mortal Kombat games. Like, if I've ever played them, I'm just a button masher. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to try to finish you just by playing all the buttons. I saw the first film. You know what? I didn't mind this. The story is bad. I didn't really enjoy the structure too much. I think a lot of the fights would have worked better if they would have done one fight at a time. And it kind of got to be a little bit of a headache when they were just doing all of them. So, like, the tournament structure would have helped a lot. But the action...
What tournament? There's a tournament in Mortal Kombat? Who would know that?
Yeah, no, the tournament structure would have helped as well, is what I mean.
Maybe Prince Goro could show up again, whoever they were taking a dump for their 5 minutes.
Yeah. I liked the action a lot, though. Like, it opens up great with all the gore. And then I got into it with the last half an hour again. There's like a middle there where I was pretty bored without the action. But I like the action. So it's a soft pass. I mean, it's not great, but it's pretty fun when there's action.
My argument is go get the choreographer from The Raid or Here Comes the Night. Like, but those people know how to do action.
For sure.
Like, that's some crazy ass shit. That's the way Mortal Kombat should look. It's a hard art. I should see bodies hitting the floor every 30 seconds. Whether it be Shaolong's minions, other than these, like, somebody's got to die.
There was one cool
good death.
There was one good death, I thought, when the hat spinning in the ground and the person gets bisected. I thought that was pretty cool.
And I thought the Sub-Zero and Scorpion fight was pretty freaking awesome.
That was good.
Teaming up.
So but it took too long to get there. I was bored.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I grew impatient. I just wanted the tournament already. Sorry, Kevin.
No, I didn't see it. I had a list that did not have Mortal Kombat on it. Although you and I did talk about it, Simon, the other day. I just didn't have time. I've been pretty inundated with work the last week. So
no problems at all.
Intern? Finish him.
Oh, I saw it. I like the knife fight at the beginning, the choreography of that. And then the last, both for the first 10 minutes and the last 10, 15 minutes I liked, but the rest of the movie, not being a video gamer, I didn't care. So I like the fight scenes at the like very end. Nothing in the middle, and I didn't care.
Okay, we're getting to the end. So being the Mortal Kombat junkie I am, I got to give it credit. It got the end right. So the Mortal Kombat finish for Scorpion is him ripping it off and blowing a guy away. That's how you kill him on the finish him. And they got that right finally, which is something was missing from the first two films. And I got to give the film credit. I did fanboy completely out on that scene. Absolutely lost it. Go on, finish him. Well, I'm like, okay, you guys did it. I'm in. Other than that, this film was lousy. So can we move along to a film about nobody?
Yes. Nobody. Directed by Ilya Naishuller and written by Derek Kolstad, who did the John Wick films, starring Bob Odenkirk, Alexis Seri Briakov. Connie Nielsen, Christopher Lloyd, Michael Ironside, Colin Salmon, RZA, and JP Manu, who I thought deserved a shout out for how much he looks like Jim Rash, the Denon community.
I did see this.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Kevin, go ahead.
Kevin, do you want to go?
Yeah, I might as well. I missed the last one. So I did see this and I loved it. I thought Bob Odenkirk was fantastic. There's a certain John Wickness about this, you know, someone being pulled back into violence from a job they used to be very good at being violent. And I, you know, a little bit more comedy than in this than I think in your standard John Wick. but the action's top notch. It was nice to see Christopher Lloyd kicking ass again with a shotgun. And overall, I highly recommend it. It's a good revenge movie. So,
I agree with Kevin. This movie was fantastic. It's the best ode to impotence that I've ever seen. Essentially, Bob Odenkirk, he's living a mild-mannered life when all of a sudden his house gets broken into and his daughter's kitty cat bracelet is stolen, supposedly. And he goes back out to find it and gets in way over his head, but it's nothing he can't handle. My one complaint maybe was that the film was very white. There was a lot of white people in this film. Up until the end when you got the RZA joining with Bob Odenkirk and Christopher Lloyd in the warehouse. Mm-hmm. The action, just top-notch from top to bottom. I actually saw this in the movie theaters. I rented out a theater with me and my sons went to go see it. And my 13-year-old son was completely shocked by Bob Odenkirk's quote-unquote rock-hard abs when he comes home and he's getting first aid. So highly recommend this film.
See, I was looking out for the rock art abs, but I couldn't find them. Because you teased them, and I was like, wait, when does he pull them out?
It's when he gets home and his wife is suturing him up and stuff.
Okay. Now it's... Yeah, true. Now it's kind of funny, like, watching this film one night after Mortal Kombat and seeing what good editing in an action movie would be. And that's the case with Nobody. I love Bob Odenkirk. I'd do anything for Nobody and John Wick mashup. That would be so much fun. I mean, because they're both very much similar worlds as... what's his name? Hutch? Hutch is an auditor who was in the army. And he's badass. And I just love the scenes, like the funny scenes here when the guy sees the seven and deuce. And he locks himself in the little room. Mm-hmm. And you just see, like, here, like, 10 locks. I thought that was great. The choreography was great. I thought Odenkirk had a lot of charisma in the action scenes. And looking forward to his, he has star power, I think, in action movies and just in any movie, really. So I think I'm looking forward to what he does next. And I love this one. I wish I could have seen it in the theaters.
In turn,
I guess I'm going to be dissenting opinion on that. I found it too similar to the movies that Liam Neeson's in, like the it's just shoot, go, and I don't know why I didn't like it. I did like the choreography, as Daniel said, like the inventive ways of like getting the kills done, but as a whole, not my type of movie.
I get that. I don't think you like this kind of movie. It's just not your thing, and that's okay. For me, this is my kind of thing. I really like action films.
I
like
thought you were going to say you disagreed with me on because of the comparison to Liam Neeson. That's why.
No, I'm getting there. Okay. I'm going to get there. I agree with you. This is a Liam Neeson type of movie. But the problem is with this, Liam Neeson can't do this kind of action. He's very much gunplay action. He doesn't do a lot of physical action. In most of his films, he's just gun, shoot, move. Odenkirk takes a different way. He went and actually got himself in shape and learned how to kick some ass. I mean, I can't see Neeson doing that bus scene in any way. Like that
bus was one part was I did like.
Awesome. I mean, I can see Liam do the scene at the end with Christopher Lloyd, but I mean, that scene's just awesome. Lloyd, can they go to the old age home, pick up Lloyd and go?
Yeah.
And he buys out the place. That part's definitely a Liam Neeson movie. But I think the thing we think about Odenkirk is he's an everyman. I don't find Liam Neeson an everyman. I think I could be Odenkirk is what I'm trying to say. Not acting ability, just going to this extreme. I kind of get that from him. And I like the way he plays his character. He's just a regular guy. Like, I don't feel he's anything else. I mean, when Neeson plays these type of characters, I always feel he's trying to be big Liam Neeson, you know, And I don't think Gordon Kirk's trying to play that, but I love this film. I love Connie Nielsen. She always does a perfect job, never seems to go over, just always seems to be solid in every role she is. So, yeah, would I like to live in this universe for a bit longer? Yeah, absolutely I would. But are we going to get another one? Do we really want one?
Yes.
I want more than 92 minutes. I want more Christopher Lloyd kicking ass and shotgunning people on his
I think the 92 minutes works for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't want a two-hour – because I don't think this concept, at least in this film, could suit 2 hours.
Yeah,
or even hour 45. I mean, we're going from action scene, home, action scene, plot point. It moves quick. Oh. And it drops everything on you as it goes. And even at the end of the film, it kind of goes, yeah, I know, you got to go. And I kind of like that. I like it's quick, in, out, shows you what it needs to do and goes. It's an action film. We want them to be an hour to an hour 45 unless it's Bond and then we're getting 2:30.
Mm. Because John Wick, they're more than, they're like 2 hours 10, right? For the most part.
But I would argue John Wick's got a little bit more lore in them, wouldn't you?
Yeah, more world building. But yeah, for sure. Just the same writer, right?
Exactly. And I don't think the writer in this one built a world for nobody. He gave some amazing scenes and some great premise, but I think the world is yet to show up.
Yeah, there's definitely more we could get into with RZA's character and just a bit more of his background, but I guess maybe that'll be for the sequel. I don't know.
Actually,
I wanted more, you know.
But actually, it wasn't just I forgot. It wasn't just Neeson. It was like any type of action star of that. It just reminded me of that too much of that. And we've had all this. Like it just like Bruce Willis, Liam Neeson. There's a few other ones, and I can't remember. But it's like we've got all this, and there's one more.
Well, you could add Keanu to that too, because he.
Kinda, I was thinking John Wick. Yeah,
one more good one.
But I guess my argument is I like these type of films. I mean, there is an action audience out there. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this tickled my fancy much more than Mortal Kombat did. And Mortal Kombat's more my bag. I thought this film was going to be a flaming pile of kitty litter going out a window of a car driving by the 401. Turned out to be awesome. I stopped at an exit. There was a Five Guys.
I've been a fan of Odenkirk since Mr. Show days. I mean, so for me to watch him go from sketch comedy to drama acting with Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, now he's this big action hero. I love the scope of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do want to ask, when did Michael Ironside become Wilford Brimley?
Just I think take he did. The gold and run. Right?
Yeah. Well,
he's got the physique now.
Well, our next film on the list has a lot of moxie. And I just want to continue, Bob. This is your type of movie. It has a female lead. It takes place in a school. It's just missing singing.
And a prom.
Oh, it does. The genre is music somehow. Oh. It has a musical, but I never get into it. But Moxie, directed by Amy Poehler, screenplay by Tamara Chestnut and Dylan Meyer, starring Hallie Robinson, Lauren Tsai, Alicia Pascual-Pena, Nico Hiraga, Sabrina Haskett, Patrick Schwarzenegger, Josie Tautou, Amy Poehler, Marcia Gray Harden, Ike Barinholtz, and Clark Gregg.
Oh, I'm up. Okay. I did like this movie. It's not a typical me movie, but it's like it's there. I like the history behind it, because her mother used to do like protests and whatever. So they were protesting. I can't remember what they were protesting, but that was it. I did enjoy it. It's like I get, and the daughter borrowed from her mother like certain things and just updated it and for the times. So that's it.
She updated what? You mean the
what? The, what character like updated her method of protesting?
But did she really? I mean, I felt she was a little bit behind on the times. I thought she should be a little more internet savvy. I would expect from a teen. Because if I gave this to Doug's son, He would have this thing up in 20 minutes all going everywhere.
But people might not just visit the website because you just wanted to do it as a sign, right?
But didn't she start doing it with a newsletter, which I thought was a little too weird for this time period? I mean,
yeah, it's a little newsletter, and it went design
viral.
It's kind of like a newsletter, but like a little magazine.
Yeah.
Right, but what I'm saying is nowadays, I mean, the writer, which I think it's Amy Poehler's the writer, she directed it too, didn't she?
She directed it, but she didn't write it.
Okay. But I mean, the writer should have upgraded. I mean, we have Twitter, Instagram, Snap. Like, there's 50,000 ways that this movie could have got the message out better, I thought, than just a newsletter. I mean, I understand the film was about the newsletter.
Yeah, it's based on a book, though, so maybe it's designed in the book.
Yeah, but how long ago would the book come out? Again, like,
I don't know, but it doesn't make sense to me. I think it gives it a timeless feel. It could be the late aughts, could be now. I think that's fine. Because, I mean, Zine didn't come about till like, 2015, right?
Okay, I'll ask you the question.
Sure.
Well, also, handing out newsletters, you can't really make somebody follow you on Twitter, but if you're handing out newsletters and stuff, there's more of a chance of people reading it.
Yeah, and there's an anonymity with that. I mean, I'm sure one of these people in the high school would be, like, a hacker of some kind, and they could find her IP address. I don't know. Maybe that's just paying ode to her mom too, right? Just being like, let's do an old fashioned style. I mean, I see your point, Simon, but I don't know.
Yeah, because the kids were looking at it like, "What's this?" And they got started reading it, and they were interested. But
because their
attention span for anything else like Twitter, like they read it, gone. But this they have an actual physical copy.
Yeah, but right? Since the guys are so against it, like, they wouldn't visit the site. They could ignore it. But since it's everywhere in the hallways, I think they have to face it, right?
Yeah.
That's my thought.
I don't know. I thought directing on this film, I had a lot of problems with Poehler directing. I thought her shots were bland, basic. I didn't see any sense of expression from her. I don't think they allowed the film to show what they wanted to show. Other than base shots that I would expect to be in this film. I was hoping for something. I don't know. Maybe I was just what I get from Amy. I'm not a big Amy Poehler fan, so I don't feel.
She might just not be a dynamic director. She might just be more focused on performances and storytelling rather than what's the cool shot, what angle should be used. She was probably more, I can't say for sure, but she's probably more focused on performances and storytelling is what I would guess.
She gets good chemistry out of the cast. And I mean, I think this is way better than Wine Country.
I didn't see Wine Country.
You didn't?
It didn't go on the list, so I didn't have to watch it.
We found one.
I'll watch it this week if you want to start. Kevin, did you watch this?
You don't have to.
I got through most of it. I agree with you. Publishing a zine is very 90s or very aughts. This seems about 10 years too late. So it could have been set at that time period and been more interesting. So she was protesting. I guess someone releases a list of cool people and who has the best ass and who's the most bangable and all these different things. So she's protesting that by putting out this zine criticizing the boys and the school dress code. And I guess the fact that the girls are being put down and alienated, and this is their way to come out of their shells. And so, you know, on that front, I guess if I were a young woman or a woman, I might appreciate it more than I did. As it was, I just thought it was okay. I didn't find it was terribly directed, but I didn't find it was terribly interesting either. So,
Are we in cancel culture today? I mean, that's what I look at. Everything's canceled. This thing wouldn't last 10 minutes, newsletter.
It depends on what you consider cancel culture. But yeah, I mean, this is not – these days, the kids would be on Twitter. You know, anything they dislike, they'd be ripping apart on Twitter and stuff. So that's about it.
I do think it gives it a timeless feel, though, which I liked. It just could be any time period, I think.
My thing was, after watching Daniel Isn't Real, watching Patrick Schwarzenegger play a high school student, that just kind of blew me away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he seems too nice.
To okay, be like, well...
Oh, I didn't...
The next room...
Daniel.
I didn't go. I was just going to say I enjoyed it. Where's my train of thought? Yeah, I liked it. It's pretty woke at times, but it's not as... It's kind of like a... Well, woke with all the sexism and such. It's just all the cancel culture. That would be something that's woke. But it's less, way less offensive. It's kind of like a less offensive cousin of Assassination Nation, which was just really in your face about that cancel culture and like, oh, all men suck kind of thing. So, and I like the chemistry between the girl and Seth. I thought that was interesting. And I like the cast, and I thought what Bowler did with the cast and all that chemistry was pretty good.
Well, the cast was a little whitewashed. I thought there was one token minority, I think, through the whole film.
There was a lot. I mean, there's, two?
Those are pretty diverse.
I mean, Nico Horiga is Asian, I'm pretty sure. And then the best friend Asian, and then the one from Saved by the Bell is...
Is she Asian, the best friend? I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I take it back. Then, I'm wrong.
And then Josie Tatoda, she's trans. So there's a lot of diversity here.
Good. Then I take it all back. I'm fine.
Fair enough.
Now, our next film will discuss my dinner tonight.
Your octopus teacher?
Correct.
Oh. All I know is that guy really loves octopus.
Loves them.
He just loves it.
Written and directed by Pippa Ehrlich and James Reed, starring Craig Foster and his son Tom Foster and the titular octopus teacher. And this is the film that won the Oscar for documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Charlotte's Kelp, right?
I like that. That's funny.
I have a question for you guys. If he was filming this the whole time, like I read he filmed for like over a year while he was diving, do you think he didn't have a story that he could edit together until the end with the babies and the mother getting eaten? Or do you think that he had a story that he wanted to tell, or that he just went with what was given to him by nature?
I think a little bit of both.
Because I'd say... Go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
Well... Like he wanted to talk about the octopus, and like he was learning. He actually, he wanted to tell the story. So he filmed in a year. So he was telling the story, but I guess he had to edit it so that it could tell the story in like
certain days.
Yeah,
and have a climax and stuff at the end.
Yeah,
yeah, but I figured it was the director's job to edit this stuff, like in the writer, because they find the story through the edit. I mean, how many hours was it this had, right? The footage? Because he went to go see the octopus every day for 315 days. So that's just, I've gained a big respect for documentary editing.
Oh, yeah.
Like in how many hours they'd have to comb through for this to find like a condensed 85-minute story, which is just impressive.
Okay. I want to start at the beginning. This guy obviously has some kind of crisis at the beginning of the film before he finds the octopus. He definitely states that. He's having some issues. Now, throughout the film, I understand nothing. I think the filming is beautiful. I think the underwater shots are fabulous. My question is, how come we don't really spend any time with his family? I mean, is it all about the octopus? I'm thinking, what does his wife think about all this?
Yeah. But the octopus is just the other woman.
Yeah, and I kind of felt this whole time going, he tells us at the beginning he's not, something's wrong. He's just not feeling it. And he goes to find the octopus, and it's interesting. And I'm like, what does his family think? Because we never really find out what they think. I mean, obviously his son joins in at the end, but I wanted to know what his wife thought of all this. I mean, she was okay. Like, get out. Good. You're gone. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, that's a good point. But I guess it's more, I was wondering that too, actually. But I guess it's just more nature Doc than caring about him in a way.
Well, if Doc went outside every day and barbecued meat for an hour, so probably 5 hours he's probably gone for, is what I'm thinking.
Here, to get all this 6 hours because he has to get the steaks. 45 yeah. minutes away.
He's got to walk, go 6 hours, and he's got to walk to the barbecue.
Yeah, 15-minute walk to the barbecue. Yeah.
So he's got to do that. So I also want to get to the point, that scene with the sharks was going after the octopus, and he's losing his mind.
Right.
Was amazing. That was like my favorite part of this film was the whole shark scene. It was like, wow. And how the octopus hiding itself, I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. That's where it got interest again.
Exactly. I mean, I was okay for like the first half an hour. I was kind of into it. Then I sort of wandered off brain-wise for half an hour while watching it. I'm like, this is a little repetitious for me, and it's not holding my attention. But I like the last half an hour a lot. Kevin, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I actually watched this in two parts because I thought the first half, while beautifully shot, wasn't that interesting. So once you get into the second half, and then there's a little bit with the shark, and she's trying to avoid the shark, and she loses a limb, and then he discovers her, and she's dying, and she seems to start regrowing her limb. I thought that was very interesting, and then I thought it was very, like as I said, the guy was very emotionally invested in this animal, which I thought was interesting, but kind of unusual. And the fact that she used the shells to create an armor for herself was very interesting. And it showed the intelligence of the animal. There are many people that believe that octopuses, because they're so radically different from every other form of creature on the planet, are aliens, are actually alien life that have invaded our oceans. Ooh. So, but yeah, I thought it was interesting. And then just the whole ecosystem of the kelps, of the kelp there, and the fact that he and his son have created a foundation to protect it after this. This movie serves a twofold purpose. One is to show how he became connected to the world again, but it's also to raise awareness about the kelp and the beauty of it so that people will give money to help support their efforts. So, I commend him. It was good done. Well done. Definitely entertaining.
Yeah,
more entertaining than I thought.
I definitely lost my interest a little bit. Like between her growing back her arm, and then the shark. There was somewhere in there where I was like, okay, it's okay, but I've lost my attention span is wandering. I'm checking my phone a little bit more. But you know what? I'm glad they won the Oscar. He spent a year of his life changing, learning from this octopus, the octopus teacher. And the cinematography is beautiful. And I mean, obviously, they're just taking... That's obvious because the ocean is just beautiful. But this is a movie that where I'm like, okay, documentary should be like... This should have been nominated for cinematography, I think. Because it's just... breathtaking, really, and just all the shots they get and just all the pictures and just the fact that like it looks beautiful from above, but it's just, to quote Little Mermaid, it's a whole new world when he goes underwater, you know, and it just looks so great. And I thought that was interesting about the film, even if it wasn't always completely enthralling.
Yeah,
I barely mumbled through that.
You're doing very well. Well, but after seeing the octopus babies at the end, do you think he's reaching to think it's the octopus's babies, or did you guys think they were when the son finds it?
I mean, they were same color, and she had just given birth. Like, how long after would that have been that they found that little octopus?
I guess.
But my question is, how many octopi are in the ocean? Are these her kids? Like, he likes to think so, but that makes him feel better. But I was kind of thinking...
He saw them being born, so yeah, they were hers. Yeah.
I guess it's just the universe coming, but like, oh, like maybe like he likes to think that it is, and then he could pass that down to his son. So it could be a little bit narratively, right?
He also doesn't show any other octopuses until she starts mating with that other one. So there's no evidence that there are other ones in that immediate vicinity. So I would think that they probably would be her children.
Okay.
Given the way that octopus generate hundreds of offspring. Right?
Well,
yeah.
Oh, can I have to? Daniel got me curious if a documentary has ever been nominated for cinematography. And the answer is no. A documentary has never been nominated for cinematography before.
Okay. Yeah,
I imagine this neither has a concert.
Whoa.
You didn't go?
No, I haven't gone. This film, I love this film from start to finish. So I'm as dissenting opinion again. This would have made my top 10 had I seen it in time. And I did vote for it for the Oscars as the documentary. From start to finish, like I felt I was learning things about the undersea life. So he was teaching himself. He was showing the documentary, but he was showing me stuff I had never known. And the octopus, that octopus was smaller than I had originally thought octopuses were. But I was interested from start to finish. I just watched the whole thing from start to finish, and I was interested the whole way through.
But yeah, where did the octopus go to school? Is my question.
Fish school.
Because he's a teacher, Simon.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Okay. The next film on our list is The Story of Kevin's Life. Nobody Knows I'm Here.
Nobody Knows I'm Here, directed by Gaspar Antillo, written by Gaspar Antillo, Josefina Fernandez, Enrique Videla, and starring Jorge Garcia, Mallory Lobos, Luis Gnecco, Nelson Brott, and Julio Fuentes.
Bob, your movie.
Yeah. Okay. I started watching it. I thought, okay, this might be interesting. It started getting boring halfway through, but by the end, I thought, okay, there's a story to this because, like, he sang when he was younger, and something happened so that he stopped, and then by the end, it's like they found out it was him doing the music again. So I just, like, halfway through, my interest started picking up. But during the first part, I'm going, oh, what's going on?
Okay, I'll pick up from there. I think this is a very low-budget film. I think that was a big hindrance to the film, that they didn't have money to do things. And I thought the story took too long to develop. I was kind of like, where are we going? And, I mean, obviously I knew he was a singer early on. And something had happened, and he was hanging out with his uncle. And I knew as soon as the woman showed up, I'm like, oh, okay, something's going to happen here. And I just felt it took forever. And when they got to the big crux and found out what the issue was, I'm like, that wasn't a good enough payoff for me to wait for this long to get there. I just didn't find this lead that interesting to me to hold my attention. I just thought it was very repetitious. Everything happened. He'd go to work. He'd mumble a bit. Talk for a couple seconds, go back into his shell. And this just continued. I'm kind of like, I don't know why this girl puts up with him either. I never really felt the connection between the two. Obviously, I knew when she showed up, she was going to be the love interest. I'm like, okay, I'll accept that. But I just felt this film lacked really a decent crisis and really anything interesting happening. Nothing really seemed to hold my attention at any time. Doug?
I did not get a chance to see this movie.
Kevin?
I started it and I turned it off. I decided to watch one of the other ones instead.
Daniel?
I did not get to this one.
Okay, so moving on.
I had a feeling it was just going to be a one. Bob and Simon conversation for that one.
This is fine. I watched it. I did make the effort.
Are we gonna go in?
I don't know how to.
Are we gonna ride on a peanut butter falcon?
Perfect. Thank you for coming to me. Yes.
Yeah. Could be a little dirty though. Written and directed by Tyler Nielsen and Michael Schwartz, starring Zach Gottsagen, Shia LaBeouf, Dakota Johnson, Bruce Dern, Thomas Hayden Church, John Bernthal, and John Hawks.
Love John Hawks.
Me too.
Kevin or Doug, did you guys watch this?
I did watch this. I thought it was well shot. I wasn't too enthusiastic about it, considering Shia LaBeouf was the star, essentially. But you know what? It was okay. It was a nice little story about believing in yourself and overcoming certain challenges. And you know, Thomas Hayden Church had a nice little turn as an ex wrestler, and you know, I thought I wouldn't want to live in that part of the world, but certainly was beautiful. Like whoever did the photography was good. So I don't know. I would say, you know, if you're looking for a decent time waster film, this is a good one.
It felt very Huck Finn to me with the riding down on the raft. I will be honest, I have never seen any of the 50 Shades films. But just based on this, Dakota Johnson, I think she's a pretty decent actress. I think everybody gave a good performance in this film. Especially, I'm going to get his name wrong.
Zach.
Yeah, Zach. I think he held the movie together really well. I don't think I've seen him in anything else besides this, but definitely not a big Shia LaBeouf fan, but I enjoyed this film.
You have something to watch this weekend, though, 50 Shades.
I think I'll pass.
Well, you're in the backyard for 6 hours grilling those steaks. You must have something to watch.
Well, there's plenty of other things to watch other than 50 Shades.
Just imagine you like grilling with your little, like, what's that, the apron? Like a 50 yes. Shades apron? Just watching it on the big screen in the backyard.
Well, just that's the apron why it on, takes nothing else.
So exactly. Far to watch the barbecue because he's got his projector right there beside it. So he had to get the 50-foot screen in that spot. Now I'm understanding about the barbecue.
Yeah, and you got your little flogger there. Okay, sorry.
That's how you tenderize the
meat. Daniel seems
exactly.
Daniel seems to know a lot about your outfit, Doug. You got something to tell us about going on over there?
I text him pictures. What?
Yeah, exactly. It's been a while. I need more, Doug.
He likes his pictures.
Okay, so I did not rewatch this one. I think I saw it very early 2020 or very late 2019. I agree with Kevin. It was well shot. I like the characters. I really liked Zach Gottskin. I liked Bruce Dern and just his relation, like that little bit of their relationship before Zach leaves the. What would that home be called? I guess because he was in a nursing home, or just a help home. I guess
that was a help home. I think.
Okay. Yeah. So I like that little thing, and then we're doing a lot of Shia movies for someone who's supposed to be canceled, aren't we? But I used to. I like his performance. I mean, I liked it when I watched it. I like his acting in general. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that now, but anyway. But yeah, I remember being a little underwhelmed in a ways. Like, I wanted to love it more. Like, I still liked it, but I wanted to like it more. But I remember liking its heart. I liked the wrestling scenes. I liked Thomas Hayden Church's little cameo as the guy who does the videos that they're going to go meet. So, I like the heart here more than anything.
Okay. First off, I've seen all the 50 Shades of Grey films, just so anybody wants to know. Good. Dakota Johnson is fine in them. I didn't find it as hardcore as I thought they would be, but we're not here to discuss that.
Yes, we are.
This wasn't for me. There's something wrong with this film. It's just not a film I enjoyed in any way. It's a little dull for me. I think the acting is fine. I think everybody does what they're supposed to do. It just doesn't do anything for me, but I don't really like subdued films, like very calm films have a nice happy ending. They have a little road trip. Not really for me. That's really all I can say about this. It just didn't work for me on any level. And you know what? If a person made a film, I just want to state it, I won't cancel them. I will watch anything. So if I haven't seen a film with Shia LaBeouf, Holes, there's another one for your list, that I will watch it.
Yeah.
So that's what I have to say.
I was actually going to put that on my next list. I might have to still, because that's just...
What about Honey Boy?
See, I
liked Honey Boy.
I haven't seen Honey Boy.
Didn't love it, liked it.
Haven't seen American Honey either.
Now, Bob got to talk, right? We're good?
No, I didn't. Oh. I got to agree with Kevin, Daniel, and Doug on it, because a combination of their opinions. I know. Yes, I know you hated it.
I didn't hate it.
I like the kids, Zach. I like it. Yeah. Like, it was like he was trying to make what was it he said?
He was trying to be the peanut butter falcon.
He's trying to be the best version of him he could be. Thank you. He was trying to be a better version of himself, and he got there. And I like the road to get there. Like, he wanted to make something. It was I can't remember what Kevin said. Oh well, it doesn't matter. It does, but I can't think of it.
Oh, well. All right, nobody knows I'm here.
That's not what I said.
Throwback. No, that was the transition. Now, Simon, I was just curious to ask: do you like movies like Mud or like Placeberry in the Pines? Because I feel like those like kind of indie feels are like a comp.
Sorry, Place Beyond the Pines, is that the Ryan Gosling film?
Yeah, like the multi-chapter one.
Yeah, it was okay. Nothing great.
Did you like Mud?
Actually, I did enjoy Mud.
Okay.
I did like Mud a lot. Mud, I thought, was a little different feel for Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey.
Now.
All right.
Moving on to our next film on our list is probably, I think, and Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, one of Kevin's favorite fictional characters.
You're wrong. I don't know what you're talking about there.
I gotta get my hood. Robin Hood, 2018 one, directed by Otto Bathurst, written by Ben Chandler and David James Kelly, starring Pierre Edgerton, Jamie Foxx, Ben Mendelsohn, Eve Hewson, Jamie Dornan, completing the 50 Shades of Grey secular motion here, Tim Minchin, Paul Anderson, and F. Murray Abraham. I'm going to take off his head. Well, so,
not one of my favorite fictional characters, no.
I thought you loved Robin Hood.
I don't love Robin Hood, no.
My bad, then.
There have been good Robin Hood movies. This is not one of them.
Lead away, Kevin.
I just thought that the attempts, it reminded me at times of A Knight's Tale, which is a much better movie, where they had modern looks and modern, dress sort of mixed in among modern music and medieval music and so forth. I just didn't care for this. I didn't like Edgerton. I thought he was actually very bland in this movie. He's usually been pretty good in the films he's done. Jamie Foxx, I guess he's just trying to do the Martin Freeman role, I didn't care for this. And Ben Mendelsohn, who I usually like, I just didn't like in this movie. As the sheriff.
Sheriff is voting him.
I actually liked the crappy Guy Ritchie Robin Hood movie more. Or King Arthur movie, I should say. More than this one.
Oh.
See, this is just trying to be... This is almost trying to be Guy Ritchie King Arthur. Because I thought it was a Guy Ritchie movie. I was like...
There were no war elephants in this, though.
That's
yeah.
Okay. Felt like Robin Hood Begins. Kind of like a Batman Begins version of Robin Hood. Yeah. Except this was all style over substance, in my opinion.
And even Two-Face at the end there, right?
So I didn't like that whole stuff about, that was the Sheriff of Nottingham, but now you are the Sheriff of Nottingham. And I'm like, well, you can't just have the same villain for the whole thing. Yeah. They can't all be Sheriffs of Nottingham.
But actually, the sheriff at the end was supposed to, is the character Will Scarlet, so he's not supposed to be the sheriff. He's supposed to be one of Robin's men, if I remember the story correctly.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted, Doug.
Oh, no, I was just building on what Kevin was saying. I didn't care for this film and style over, like I said. Although it did have Bono's daughter, and she's not bad.
Which one is that?
On Your Eyes?
Eve Hewson. That's Bono's daughter. Oh, okay. I actually liked her in the Cinemax show The Nick. That was a great series. And she was really good in it.
See, I don't know personal lives of any celebrity. So
that's Clive Owen, right?
Yep. That's correct. Two seasons, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All directed by Steven Soderbergh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go.
Do you want to go, Simon?
You can go ahead.
Okay. I feel like this is an experiment just to grab a bunch of charismatic actors and just be like, okay, let's just take away all your charisma and just give you a really, really boring script. Because I love Edgerton and Kingsman, Rocket Man, Eddie the Eagle, even. I think he's a great actor. And Sing, too, the animated one.
He played the gorilla singing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny because he was singing the same song that he sung in Rocket Man.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking that, but I was going to go past it.
So he got the job.
He's still standing. Yeah. I did not like this movie. Even the set design I didn't find that great. Found it weird how it was kind of like the classic green look and the hood for Armani. Armani Robin Hood. And I just thought that was strange. I felt like the worst scenes were like, okay, what if we're in a modern war, but the only difference is that the arrows are automatic and there's like a machine gun rapid fire arrows. So I thought that was all kind of strange. And it was, I don't know why this movie was made. It's kind of one of those films where I missed it when it first came out 3 years ago. And I curse you, Bob, for making me catch up to it.
I saw it in the store and I'm going, hey, I should see this because it's like a different retelling. That's why I bought it.
Okay. But I don't really blame you.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do.
If I don't see this ever again, I'll be happy. I just found this film had too many explosions. Really didn't hold my interest at any time. I just don't care for another Robin Hood origin story or any story with Robin Hood. I've had enough. Kevin already burnt me out with Robin and Marian. If he thinks I've forgotten about that movie, I did not like.
Robin and Marian is awesome.
What's that one?
Maybe watch. Jamie Foxx now just does movies for cash. I really think he's lost his edge.
That's generally except for that one he did with
Michael B. Jordan movie. He was on death row. I thought he actually put some effort into. Yeah.
Just Mercy. Motherfucker.
Mercy. But other than that, I just think this is just another flaming pile of crap. It came out in what, February or something? I think I saw it 3 years ago and I have really nothing to say about it other than it had lots of pretty explosions and didn't really interest me.
Pretty colors.
So
Jamie Foxx is Motherfucker Jones.
Speaking of pretty colors,
wait,
Mr. Friend.
Wait.
You didn't go?
No, I just interjected a few times.
I thought you had. That's why you didn't go with us. Okay.
No, because I was just interjecting with Doug and Daniel saying, putting in our little interjections there. But I bought this movie, as I said, and I like the different retelling of the story because usually they're in the forest in green. And I thought this was good. This was okay. I was going to say good, but after hearing yours, I just like the chemistry between Edgerton and Jamie Foxx. And some of the other stuff I like too, but I just like the different retellings of story sometimes, not all the time.
Fair enough. Now, green is Daniel's favorite color, I think.
Solid green. trying to do a gold member, but with green. I'll show myself out. The Green Mile, written, directed
the
by...
The door is right behind you, right there.
It's to my right, actually, sir.
Oh, sorry. Feel free to use it. Bye-bye.
The Green Mile, written and directed by Frank Darabont, adapted from a novel by Stephen King, starring Tom Hanks, Michael Clarke Duncan, David Morse, Bonnie Hunt, James Cromwell, Michael Jeter, Doug Hutchison, Sam Rockwell, Barry Pepper, Jeffrey Gimon, Patricia Clarkson, and Harry Dean Stanton as Tutu. Oh, and Graham Greene. as well. Did you want me to? I'll start on this one.
Yes, that was the plan.
Okay, right. I forgot. Yeah, so this is actually my favorite film, and it's kind of nice when you haven't seen a movie for a couple of years and then you remember why it's your favorite movie. Because I've saved all my mumbling for this film because I love it.
What year was this movie?
1999. It's a year.
20 years to see it.
Wow. The year that Michael Caine beat Michael Clark Duncan for the Oscar for supporting. But John Coffey is one of my favorite performances, like ever. Like I love Michael Clark Duncan in this movie. I love Tom Hanks. I love all the humor. I'll always say like, oh, I think this guy's cheese is slid off its cracker for that moment in the film. I'll always, it was interesting remembering how certain arcs happened. Like I forgot how Percy got mean again. So it was interesting seeing him getting humiliated by Wild Bill, played by Sam Rockwell, who was just such a great villain. I love the humor. I love the heart of the film. I just like the world building a lot and how it melds the drama of a prison drama with the fantasy of what John Coffey is, and just like how he can heal people and all that good stuff. And I'm mumbling a lot, so maybe I'll just add on to other people when someone else goes. But I love this film, and I remembered why I love it. And you laugh and you cry, and I think it's so great. I love it a lot.
Actually, can I go?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I got to build on Daniel. I love this movie for the very reason I've been avoiding it for 21 years, because I saw it in Walmart, picked it up, and I thought, I got to watch this because I've heard so many things about it. So I watched it finally after 21 years, and I enjoyed it for the same reasons Daniel did. I thought it was great acting by both Michael Clark Duncan and Tom Hanks. I thought the story was really well done. At the end, they still have the mouse that's still alive after all that time. And it was just really well shot.
Well, it's Frank Darabont. It's got to be well shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love seeing all the Frank Darabont, like, regulars, too.
Oh, sorry,
like,
I forgot one thing. I didn't even recognize Michael Jeter or Sam Rockwell. I'm looking, I'm going, is that them? And then I find out it is them, and I'm going, that's really good makeup on them. Or they've changed their, like, changed the
look. I think they were just young.
Yeah. Well, 21 years ago, so...
Yeah, 99, yeah.
Yeah. 22 now. Anyway.
Math is hard. It's okay.
Yeah.
Considering I went into college for accounting, I mean.
Oh, that's a bad look, Bob. Yeah.
Then my dad says, well, he thought one time, you didn't do well in math in school and you went into accounting. I'm like, yes.
Well, accounting is more knowing where the numbers are supposed to go and
right.
add
it's
up
different,
to
it's
a certain
kind of
sum.
Yeah.
You're not calculating the Farmer Joe's fence and how much fence he needs.
Well, you are calculating the rate of commission against the media cost of something, thankfully.
Have that formula. They're not, right. You know what I mean? It's not. It's more plugging things in than math.
The formula is already built in, thankfully.
Exactly. Sorry, Doug, to cut you off.
Were you a real accountant, though? Or were you more like an auditor like Hutch from Nobody?
Not an auditor, no. Not even a real accountant, according to some people. But now it doesn't matter. It's like I'm in a different type of job, so.
Okay. Sorry, Doug.
Sorry, Doug.
I was just going to say, like, anytime you get Frank Darabont and Stephen King together, it's going to be a really good film. I think Darabont is one of the filmmakers who really understands Stephen King's stories. Mm-hmm. They're not just about the scares. They're about humans. They're about how humans react to situations that are well beyond normal, to say the least. In this, there aren't really too many scares to be had. There is the horrific murder of the two young girls, but that mostly happens off screen. I think we see the aftermath of it.
Yeah, just their heads. Yeah.
And Darabont definitely handles the storytelling. I guess, well, actually, allow me to go back and say the other big horrific moment is the dry execution. That I remember reading that in the novel form, and Darabont definitely filmed that just as horrific as I had imagined it when I was reading it.
Yeah.
But Darabont also gets the heart. John Coffey, that's a bit of a Stephen King, JC, Jesus Christ analogy there. But he gets the heart of that character, and Michael Clark Duncan gives, bar none, his best performance ever, I think, in this film. Just the way he handles the mice, the way he handles the other inmates, the way he handles Tom Hanks, and my personal favorite character actor of all time, David Morse. I don't think he gets shouted out enough. I love him. So anytime he shows up, I'm a very happy guy. And he was great in this movie, too. But yeah, and also shout out to Sam Rockwell. I think this might have been his first movie. Maybe. I don't know if I'm right or not. But his performance, he was evil. He was evil incarnate in this film. And it was great.
That was Percy.
Okay, while we're going on about the David Morse, I will back you up, but I'll throw see you at JT Walsh.
He's good too. I love David Morse.
So do I. I guess I'm going to be. I don't hate this movie because I always get told I hate things. This thing is just too slow for me. I think I know it's a long movie. It's got a lot of compact in here. This is just not for me. It's just, you guys know what I'm like. Things slow down. I tend not to really enjoy them. And I think I probably should sit down and do a rewatch this sometime. And I probably enjoy it more than I kind of know the characters now and know where it's going to end up. And I think I needed to watch the whole thing once. And I think on the second rewatch, I will deem a lot more from it. I just found this film slow for me. I think everybody does a great job. It's just too slow for me.
There's not,
too
like, drawn not enough out. Action for you, in other words.
I don't really need action. It's Darabont. I love Darabont, but I know how he likes to linger on shots and get that richness in shots. You see it in Walking Dead. You see it in The Fog. That's just what Darabont does.
The Mist.
Simon, I saw this movie because of you. That's why I saw this movie, because of you.
Me? Why you, me?
You said
I've seen it.
No, I know that because like I don't watch enough. That too. I don't watch enough movies that sort of like older movies, and if you know what I mean, like from the 80s, 90s, I don't watch enough. But now I'm starting to, and it's your fault. In a good way.
Oh no, I don't know how to take that. Okay, great. Well. Like I said, I would probably give a recommend to The Green Mile. I just probably need to watch it again to be a different headspace than when I saw it.
When did you first see it? Just curious.
3 years ago, probably.
Okay.
This year was the first time I saw it.
Yeah, Kevin, did you speak?
No, I have not. I love this movie. I don't like it as much as I like Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, Shawshank, I love.
And I do think it's better than the movie related one. What's that? I can't remember the name of that one. Darabont's.
Matinee. The one with Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I think it's Matinee.
The Matinee is the Joe Dante film.
Yeah, because Darabont has directed The Mist, Shawshank, and The Green Mile. I think that's it for his films. I think he's only got two.
Anyway, I love it. The casting's fantastic. Sam Rockwell had done
Clown House was his first.
For about 10 years before this film. So okay. He'd done bit roles on television, and he'd just done a few major films before this, but not where he was a leading man. He was in a movie called Celebrity, Safe Men, Louis and Frank, Jerry and Tom. But he had that was a big year for him because he had Green Mile. He was in Galaxy Quest, which I love.
Right.
I love Galaxy Quest.
As Guy Fleegman. And he was also the villain in Charlie's Angels.
The first one?
The first one, yes.
I've seen that since theaters.
Yeah, I just remember Crispin Glover in that one.
Yeah.
Or was he in the second one?
No, he was in the first one.
Okay.
So, Eric Knox, anyway, this, we're not reviewing Charlie's Angels. I like this film a lot. I like the mystery of it. I like the supernatural elements. You can't go wrong with Tom Hanks. The guy always delivers. And again, outstanding performances from Michael Clark Duncan and you know, and everybody. No complaints. It's a solid movie. I think it's one that people should see. You know, if you liked Shawshank Redemption and you like Stephen King, I think this is worth watching. It's not Cujo or Christine or anything like that, or any of the supernatural ones, but it's got a, you know, slight supernatural element to it. It's just more about people and relationships, which, you know, again, I highly recommend. And Darabont is a great director. So,
yeah. I think this one is like one of my favorite casts. And yeah, I said it's my favorite movie, and I don't think I'd cut a minute of it.
Yeah.
And I looked it up. It was The Majestic. That was the movie.
That's
the one. Majestic, yes.
Okay. I think Matinee, that's the John Goodman one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yay, Great Mile.
Okay.
Yay.
Okay. Well, now we're going to talk about my personal favorite Stephen King movie. Absolutely favorite Stephen King movie. It's kind of, this film title reminds you of some films I've had to watch this week, full of misery.
I was trying to think of a bad Stephen King movie that I was like, oh, The New Pet Cemetery. That's your favorite Stephen King, Simon?
Yes, that's it. The New Pet Cemetery.
Misery.
Going down to the cemetery. Thought you were dead.
Oh, no. We're singing now. Misery. That will bring me misery if you continue to sing.
Oh, I'm going to stop. Don't worry. That was it.
Misery, directed by Rob Reiner, written by William Goldman, and adapted from a novel by Stephen King, starring James Caan, Kathy Bates, Richard Farnsworth, Lauren Bacall, and Frances Jernhagen. Don't know if there's any one.
I'm going to start. I friggin' cannot believe how much I love this film. Now, the reason why I didn't see it until last year, I'm going to tell you guys, I used to go to Sam the Record Man way back at the store in Toronto, and they used to play that when she hits him in the foot with the sledgehammer over and over and over again. Every time I was in there, it would be the same guys rewinding that scene. I'm like, don't you guys have anything else to watch? So that kind of turned me off the movie because I'd already seen part of it, because you guys know what I'm like. So then I thought, you know what? I need to see Misery. I've seen almost every Rob Reiner film but Misery. I'm going to watch Misery. Somebody should have slapped me in the face 10 years ago and said, watch this film. It's friggin' perfect. Kathy Bates is perfectly cast. James Caan, perfectly cast. This film builds tension like nothing I've seen in years. Oh, my God, I love Misery. I love the set design. I love the characters. I love the dialogue. I find everything in this film believable. The whole thing makes sense to me. I gave Misery a 10 out of 10. Absolutely friggin' love this film.
Wow.
I don't think I'll ever see another Stephen King film I will enjoy as much as this one. You guys will have to correct me if I'm wrong. I like this more than The Shining. This is my favorite Stephen King film.
Nice.
I got to agree with you. What?
You're agreeing with me. Do you have a
yes,
fever?
Because I just watched this year.
Let me feel your forehead, Bob.
What?
Let me feel your forehead if you have a fever.
I just watched this year. I absolutely loved it it was set in that house. He gets in the car accident. She's taking care of him, but when she, like the camera angles that they use, like when it's farther away and she's all friendly and everything and says, I'm such a fan. And then it pans right close to her, like when she goes nuts and I'm going, ah, and I'm going, you gotta be, this was good. And I'm going, I'm glad I saw this because like this and the last, this one in Green Mile, I'd never seen before now. And I'm going, I'm glad I saw this. Yeah. And the actors had something to do with it and the camera angles as well. That's it.
I'll admit,
you're missing.
What?
I just want to say the tension level of this film, when she figures out what's going on, he's trying to escape. Yeah. And the tension level, and it just builds
and builds.
And every second of that thing, I'm losing my crap going, is he going to finally do it? Nope. Boom! Knocks him right back to where he was.
Like, that scene that you were talking about with the hammer and the clock and breaks his legs again, I'm going, oh my God,
that was messed up. I'm like, you, Steve King, you win. That was messed up for me. That threw me for a loop. I can't wait to show this to my daughter because she's into thrillers now. I want her to watch Misery so badly because I figure she won't speak to me for a week afterwards.
Is that the motivation then?
Oh, 100%. Well, she talks a big game about how she can. Oh, I can watch anything. I'm like, you watch Misery. Get back to me.
If you don't want her to talk to you for like a month, you got to Clockwork Orange it, you know?
No.
Things on the eyes. Now, Kevin, you want to go?
Sure. I mean, I'll be quick. Perfect. I love Rob Reiner's films. Kathy Bates, perfect casting. I'm not a fan of James Caan, and I like him in this movie, which is a rarity. In fact, I don't like him in almost everything except this and The Godfather movies.
Me and Kevin agree.
Yeah. It's definitely worthwhile. It's been a long time since I've watched this. I haven't revisited it recently, so maybe I should. Maybe I'll look into rewatching it. But Kathy Bates is just like, you don't want to run into Kathy Bates in the woods. So, and she was young in this. She was only 30 or so when they made this. She was 32 when the film came out.
She won the Oscar, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what was weird watching my Love Boat thing, she does show up in the Love Boat as a bride through the crap out of me. I'm like, that's like 24-year-old Kathy Bates.
Wow.
Yeah. Oof.
And I was like, oh my God. And she sounds like Kathy Bates, looks like Kathy Bates. It just took me a couple seconds. Sorry to cut you off twice, Doug. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't seen this movie in decades, but Kathy Bates' performance has stuck with me since I have watched it. Her whole diatribe about him, the matinee idol escaping the cock-a-doodle car. He couldn't do that. It has stuck with me for however many years it's been. She was fantastic in this film. And I have to say, I disagree with Kevin. I do like James Caan. I like him in The Godfather. I like him in this. Thief by Michael Mann is a great film with Jimmy Caan in it. I'm a Caan fan.
Is he the con man that made you to move your barbecue from close to the house to the middle of the farmland?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I'm here. I'm with you guys, and I haven't watched this
Nice you're here.
I know, right? I haven't watched this since 2013, according to my Letterboxd. I wish I would have rewatched it because I love this film. I love Kathy Bates as what's her last name? Annie Wilkes? I think that's
Annie Wilkes, is it?
Nope. Yeah. Annie Wilkes.
Okay. And I want to watch the novel. I would like to read the novel before revisiting the film. And I think I have it upstairs. So I'll have
the novel's a little different.
Okay. I'll just watch the movie again then. If it's different.
That was my last question, Doug. How much different is the novel from the movie?
I'll be honest, I haven't read the novel in an even longer time than seeing the film. I do know that she does more to him than just hobble him in the book. There is more violence. I just don't exactly remember what.
That would make sense, though. But I think the film, that would take away from that suspense factor.
Like, and him the big oof of that scene, yeah.
Yes, it just blows me away. So I guess we're moving into modern times.
By going back in time to modern times.
1936. Modern Times, directed and written by Charlie Chaplin, starring Charlie Chaplin, Paulette Goddard, Henry Bergman, Tiny Sanford, and Chester Conklin.
So I'm going to start. This was my last movie to watch on the AFI list. I'd seen 99 out of 100 of them, and I said, okay, well, I guess I better watch my last one. I don't know why it took me so long. This film is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. The physical comedy that Chaplin puts himself through just shocks me. And the jokes are hysterical. They made me laugh to this day. The jokes with his hands and how he does stuff and how he moves stuff. And he gets stuck in the machine. I think that's great. When he goes outside, the jokes work. I find this film's just genius for its time. Just an absolute genius of a film that I really think kids today should watch these type of films to learn where films have built from to today. I think Chaplin is just a master, and people have stolen from him throughout the years, but you see it in modern times why he's a master. And it's a great dictator. He is just that good at comedy. Keaton, that good at comedy. Frank Lloyd, wrong name. You know the guy I'm talking about. Safety Last.
Henry
really Lloyd. Good. Yeah, there you go.
Henry Lloyd?
Harold Lloyd.
Harold.
So these Hendon things Lloyd. Need to be watched. I just think this is a genius of a film, and everybody should see it. There's just so many solid jokes for this, top to bottom.
Yeah, to what you were saying, this is my first, to add on to that, everyone should see this. This is my first Charlie Chaplin movie. Because I
oh,
just,
my God.
Shut up. I focus on the noughts and the aughts and like past 1990s. So I haven't really gone to a deep dive of pre-1950s. So I think I can be forgiven.
Not by me or not.
Okay, that's fine, dude. but I enjoyed this. I prefer something like, I liked Duck Soup a lot better by the Marx Brothers. I thought that was way funnier. I just thought both films kind of have thin stories, but I thought the comedy worked a lot here. But I didn't love it. I liked it a lot though. Like, I thought it was funny, and I could see where Chaplin has influenced people. And I didn't have as many belly laughs as Buck Duck Soup though. And I think I just prefer the talkies than the silent films. But I'd be curious to see more Chaplin. Is he a new star or something? He's a new guy on the block.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'll be honest, this isn't my favorite Chaplin film. I think silent era, I prefer City Lights and Gold Rush.
Gold Rush is a great film too.
I think Gold Rush might be my favorite. With the that's where the dancing potato comes from. The famous scene.
I think the bear scene is my favorite, and when they move the house around 40 times.
Yes, but
which
I think honestly,
which one does he do?
That's Gold Rush.
Okay, because I bought my dad the little figurine from that one time.
Honestly, though, my favorite Chaplin film is probably The Great Dictator. I think that might have been his first sound film.
It is, yeah.
But getting back to modern times, this movie, it actually kind of shocked me with the fact that it had cocaine in it. I was not expecting there to be a scene with cocaine in a silent film.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah, it was actually, it must have been before the Hays Code that let them get away with this. So it the fact that a silent film can shock me with its content, that's definitely a plus in my book.
I was shocked when they were singing, what was it, the Darkies in those lyrics when they're in the restaurant. I really like that scene too, though. Sorry, that was just something that shocked me.
I mean, this is a classic, so I'm not going to argue against it. I have no complaints. It isn't my favorite Chaplin film. Technically, it's his first sound film because while he does not speak in it, he does use sound in the factory scenes with the machinery. And the classic. So in a sense, this was his statement about against the evolution of film, because everybody was doing talkies at the time, and he was the one that was holding out. He didn't want the tramp to speak. So, which is why his first talking role was as the Great Dictator. And he kind of puts even though he's a factory worker in this, this is kind of the putting the tramp character to rest. Great gags, visually stunning. The scene of him going through the cogs of the machine is a classic. The story of him and the waif is almost comparable to him and the small child in The Kid, connecting with the abandoned, the people on the sidelines of society and its advancement. Totally worth checking out. I think anything Chaplin did is worth reviewing. And it reminds me that I have a bunch of later Chaplin films I still haven't seen that, like Limelight and Monsieur Verdu, which I have a copy of, but I've just never watched.
I actually watched Monsieur Verdu last year, and I was going through a big Orson Welles phase, and he gave Chaplin the story idea for Monsieur Verdu, and it's actually really good. It's shockingly good.
He's a killer, I think. Is he not a serial killer?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to see Chaplin play against type like that was really entertaining.
Yeah.
Now, is Paulette Goddard, is she in a lot of the Chaplin movies? Because I liked her a lot. Let me look. So she was in The Great Dictator. Maybe that was the only two that she did.
You know, it's funny. I always think back to Robert Downey Jr.'s Chaplin when I think about his career and his life, because they did a pretty good job of summarizing his life.
So, okay. I haven't seen that one either.
Worth checking out. That's interesting to see that Charlie Chaplin's daughter plays his mother. So Geraldine Chaplin plays her own grandmother in that movie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Well, we're moving on to the favorite part of the show.
No.
Is that the fourth time today?
Every movie, yes. Bob is last.
I'm waiting to talk. Like I was introduced to Chaplin like when my dad was alive, and like the Chaplin films were, he really loved them, so we watched them together. I don't remember seeing this one, except for the part where he goes through the machinery. I'm sure that was Purples or something, but I love the film due to the fact that it's Chaplin, of course. And we used to watch the Chaplin films all the time when I was younger. So like this had a special place like to watch that. And he liked Charlie Chaplin a lot. So, but I really enjoyed this film and I don't remember ever seeing it.
But maybe your dad never put it on.
When you don't remember a film, though, you know, and you could watch it like it is for the first time. I like that feeling.
I do remember other Charlie Chaplin films because we used to sit there and watch them together when I was younger. So,
cool.
Fair enough.
Now you can move on.
Everybody's favorite part of the show. Doug, what did you buy?
Okay, actually, I got a bunch that just arrived today, so you can take a look here. We got a.
How did I know?
The 1970s King Kong.
Ooh. Oh, classic. Jessica Lange is beautiful in that.
Yes. Yeah. A Bruce Campbell Running Time. It's a movie all takes place in real time. Early Clint Eastwood I haven't seen. Escape from Alcatraz.
I have seen it.
I got both Let the Right One In and the American remake Let Me In.
See both of those. I love those.
So,
seen one of them.
Body Double, De Palma.
Yeah. I think Kevin made us review that.
And one of the most actually, this one arrived last week, but it's one of the most insane movies I have ever seen by an Oscar-winning director, Day of the Dolphin by Mike Nichols.
Yeah, you were discussing that on Facebook. I have not seen it.
It will be on my next list.
I know.
It is insane.
I was going to watch it, and I said, no, Doug, I'll wait for Doug's list. If it doesn't make it, I will watch it then. Kevin?
All right, so I bought Justice Society World War III, or World War II, I should say, which will be on the animation episode. I bought, for $20, I got the full series of Bewitched.
Cool.
Which is like a ridiculous number of episodes. There's like almost 300 episodes of Bewitched in its 10-year run. 254 episodes.
8 seasons.
And although I'm a little miffed that they decided to colorize the first 3 seasons from 64 to 66, but it is funny to see like Adam West and other Batman regulars appear on Bewitched before they hit it big with Batman. So,
is there a black and white option, or did they just colorize it?
They just did in color. They just colorized it. I picked up, so that was $20 for the full season of 250 episodes. I got Batman Brave and the Bold season 3 for $10. I had it on DVD.
Outrageous.
Yes. And, I used the Hammers of Justice to pick that up. And, you know, I even though I have Crave with HBO Max and all that stuff, I figured I might as well pick up a nice 4K copy of the last season of Game of Thrones. So I have a full set. So I picked that up for $15. So, and rewatched it last week.
Any better, or just as bad?
No, it's, you know what? I think there was a lot of fan service in the last season of Game of Thrones, but coming back and revisiting it, this will probably be the fourth time I've rewatched it. I think it's pretty good. It's pretty solid.
Well, I blame Kevin. I've watched 3 episodes of Bewitched now. I will watch some more in the future, just depending on what I have going on. Problem is, with lockdown, everybody's home all the time. I don't have that chunk of time in the afternoon when I come home and nobody's home where I sit and watch 2 hours of Bewitched. Because my wife's like, why are you watching this? Because it's funny.
It is funny. It is really funny.
I think the jokes are solid, still make me laugh. Agnes Moorehead runs that whole show.
Yeah. But, you know, they're all good. Dick York. Is it Dick York in the first ones or Dick Sargent?
Yes. I think it's Dick Sargent comes in season 6, I think.
Yeah. I like York better because he looks like Jim Carrey, first off. Like, he could be his father.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, classic stuff. I mean, and you know who's great is Larry Tate. His boss.
Larry Tate is a great straight man.
He is hilarious. Yeah. Lots of little, and very Mad Men in the first season.
Yes.
There's a, you know, having to read it, I'm like, did they actually copy elements of Bewitched into season 1 of Mad Men as their template?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And last thing I want to talk about what somebody else says, I think. I finished a PS2 game. I finally finished Final Fantasy X. So there we go. It's done. Never going to play that again. Loved it.
When did that game come out?
Oh, I don't know. 2008, 2009.
So what are you going to move on to from 2010?
So I have a story. So I finished, I'm playing Resident Evil 4 right now. And so I was casually on Wikipedia looking up stuff. And I saw Resident Evil Outbreak. I'm like, I've never played that. So I was just casually looking. And then I remember I had the other day somebody was over and I was in my garage looking for something. And I remember I bought a box of PS2 games at a garage sale for $10. Haven't looked at it in 2 years. Opened it up, Resident Evil Outbreak. I'm like, sweet, I don't have to buy that. But I mean, I really need to go through my garage and take out those PS2 games so I actually remember what I have. But yes, people, I'm still playing on a PS2. I'm playing NBA Street, though, but I should be done to talk about it next time we talk. I hopefully will be done.
So that game came out in 2003.
2003?
Yeah. And Resident Evil 4 came out in 2005.
And Final Fantasy X?
Let me look it up.
Nothing wrong with PS2, though. I like PS2.
Listen, by the time Doug can get to his barbecue and back, I should be done the next game.
I got to say, Simon, if you don't move your head too much. It looks like you have a long, flowing head of hair.
I know. I kind of like.
I was thinking dreadlocks.
Is that Garrus? Yeah. Wow.
So which game, Final Fantasy 2?
Ten.
Okay.
So, yeah, just so people want to know what I'm doing, why I have a PS2, I just feel that...
2001.
Okay, so it's a 20-year-old game. I still enjoyed it. I had a good time.
I've been playing the new MLB The Show on Xbox One.
Is Xbox One the newest console?
Yeah, but I mean, there's Xbox One S that is the newest one. But yeah, I'm pretty sure those still play Xbox One games. So I have the first generation Xbox One.
Now we'll throw it over to the master. Doug, what systems do your kids have?
We have Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Actually during quarantine, the kids got Oculus systems.
Oh, cool.
So they've been doing some VR stuff.
I would trip over everything. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm watching.
So Simon, I have to admit, I do actually play a game from 2003 from time to time.
And what game is that, Kevin?
It's Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball.
Do I even want to know if it's that game have naked women?
It's just basically like 30 different girls in their spicy bathing suits playing beach volleyball, basically.
That Bob would pass for true.
You buy different bathing suits for them. And
still to this day?
No, it's been a while since I played it, but I do have it.
Is that for PS2?
No, for my Xbox.
Oh, okay.
No, I can't play that game. I'm sorry. But if I can and I find it, I'll give you an update. And I guess we're out of here. So if they make it.
Doug barbecues it.
Yes.
Smile.
Not too close to the house.
Okay.
See ya. Okay.